had my name tag hanging over my nose.
Good morning. We're all survivors of another Thanksgiving.
My name is Audrey Wiseman, and my husband and I have been coming to this church and members of this church for 56 years. And in the pulpit this morning, we have Dee Evans, and she's going to speak to us about Buddhism. You're invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, Kate Werther room, just through the doors behind me. And we will be having a potluck to which you are very welcome to come. We hope that if this is your first time visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitors' cards that could be found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate. And handing it to the usher. If you'll do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about all the programs and activities going on here at the church. If you would like to learn more about the church and about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in the fellowship hall, where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you are certainly welcome to take home with you. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. At this time, I would like to invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any joys, milestones, or concerns you may bring with you to the church.
Hi, I'm Eric Johnson. I have a brief announcement. I'm doing Children's Chapel next week, and for all those kids and parents, this is your chance to get that hated musical instrument out of the house for just a little while. So if you'd like to send your kid with a musical instrument that is loud and noisy and you would like to have out of the house, bring it to, have your kid bring any kind of musical instrument they would like to Children's Chapel next week, because we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to enjoy the diversity of music.
During our first service, an announcement was made, and Mary said that she would like it made again. And this was made by Pat Murphy. And he said, "This past week, I learned that I will not have to have a knee replacement at this time, and that my colon is totally clear. Both not what I expected. I am very grateful for Lucy Booten, who was going to take me to the hospital and then back home after the procedure on Wednesday, but couldn't after the doctor postponed it for a few hours. Also, for Brenda McCoy, who stopped in the middle of preparing her Thanksgiving dinner to come out in the cold, miserable rain and take me home that afternoon. It sure is good to have nice, caring people like that around you. Thanks to both of you and to the others who offered to help. And I must mention that Brenda now has pneumonia. So think of her." Call to worship. I have two or three programs here, so please bear with me. Stephen, go ahead.
You forgot what you want to do.
No, that's all
right. While I tell everybody good morning and welcome to this special place, I'm Stephen Mead, Director of Religious Education, and there are at least four social service opportunities going on at the church, two of which are sponsored by the RE program. and one of them is the box you were just given. This is guests at your table. This is the official kickoff, although we kind of passed them out a little early. The Unitarian Universalist Service Committee does worldwide humanitarian and social justice efforts throughout the world. And last year, by putting coins and loose paper change, and those who don't want to, you know, collect coins can, you know, just write a check. And we collected $600 last year. We'll be collecting these boxes in mid-January. And the other is the Oasis Women's Center, which is a domestic violence shelter for women. And recently, a young lady with two young children showed up, and the center has asked for our help in making a pleasant Christmas for them. So we've adopted a family, and there's a sign-up sheet out in the Kate Worker room with sizes and the kinds of gifts and the dollar amounts and so forth. Please give as you are able. And those are due on the 12th of December, gift wrapped and marked, and then I'll take them to the Oasis Women's Center by the 15th. Thank you.
The prelude begins our worship service as Meredith Jones will light our chalice. The offering benefits the Nature Institute of Godfrey, Illinois. One half of the cash collection and any undesignated checks are given to charitable causes. The money donated does not include pledged checks or money otherwise earmarked by the giver. Earmarked donations are distributed in accordance with the giver's instructions. The mission of the Nature Institute is to foster an awareness and appreciation of the natural world through preservation, education, and restoration. It is a nonprofit environmental organization educating children and adults. And it's located out across from the Gordon Moore Prairie, and it is a very, very wonderful place. Now, would we please have the offering? A gathering of the children.
Good morning. What does the chalice room sometimes say? Welcome, welcome, everyone. Hi, Tori. Welcome to this special place. Something special is going to happen this morning, and I bet you don't know what it is because it's for the grown-ups. But I'm going to tell you something that they're following your good example this morning. How about that? They're going to be exploring Buddhism. It's something that we don't often do every day, every Sunday here. So, what have we been studying all fall? World religions and wisdom traditions. We've been learning about some of the sources that inspire us as Unitarian Universalists. Sources that give us permission to be good to ourselves. Sources that teach us how to behave to one another and to be good to one another. And lastly, sources that compel us to do good in this big wide world. You have to wait, Tori. Now, do you think it would be helpful if you were really powerful to do some of those things? Yes. Everybody in the sanctuary, raise your hand if you've ever wanted to be more powerful than you are today. To make something go your way. To stop something that might have happened. Or to make something happen that would be good. What do you think would happen if you got your wish? Well, I'm reminded of a story about what happens, or what could happen. And this story is from India, birthplace of the Buddha. And this is how it was. There once was a stonecutter, and he was very unhappy with himself. Now, a stonecutter in India is a very hard job, and they cut stones to make paving blocks and stones to build buildings like our church. And at the end of a day, and it's very hot in India, he was very hot and very unhappy. And he passed by a wealthy merchant's house. And through the open gateway of the house, he saw many fine possessions and important visitors. How powerful, oh wow, how powerful that merchant must be, thought the stonecutter. And he became very envious and wished he could be like the merchant. Now in India, there are very many gods, and two of them have been following the life of our stonecutter. And they look at one another and said, let's see where this goes. To his great surprise, he suddenly became the merchant, enjoying more luxury and power than he had ever had before. Ever imagined, but he was envied and detested by those less wealthy than himself, which was just about everyone. But soon a high official passed by and he was carried in a sedan chair. You don't see sedan chairs very often today, do you? At least in Alton. So this high official was passed, and he was passed by, and he was accompanied by attendants and escorted by soldiers beating gongs, and everyone, no matter how wealthy, had to bow down to the high official. Whoa, how powerful that high official must be, he thought. I wish I could be that high official. And it was so, and he became the high official. He was carried everywhere in his embroidered sedan chair, feared and hated by the people all around. And like I said, it was hot. And it was a hot summer day, so the official felt very uncomfortable in the sticky sedan chair, and he looked up at the sun, and it shone proudly in the sky, unaffected by his presence. Whoa, how powerful the sun must be. I wish I could be the sun. And it was so. And he became the sun, shining fiercely down on everyone, scorching the fields, and cursed by farmers and all the laborers. But a huge black cloud moved between him and the earth, so his light could no longer shine on everyone. Whoa, how powerful that storm cloud is, he thought. I wish I could be that cloud. And it was so. So he became the cloud, and he flooded the fields and villages, and he was shouted at by everyone. But soon he found he was being pushed away by some great force and realized it was the wind. Whoa, he realized how powerful it is. I wish I could be that wind. And it happened. He became the wind, and he was blowing tiles off the roofs of houses and uprooting trees and feared and hated by all below. But after a while, he ran up against something that would not move. No matter how forcefully he blew against it, it wouldn't budge. It was a tower of mountainous rock. Whoa, he thought, how powerful that mountain of rock must be. I wish I were that mountain. And it was so. He became the rock, more powerful than anything on earth. And he was content until he heard the tap, tap, tap of a hammer and chisel and felt himself being diminished. What could be more powerful than I? And he looked down upon his ginormous immensity, and far, far below on the slopes, there was the figure of a stonecutter. And so, the stonecutter found that he had all the power he needed to make his way in this world. And from another source that Unitarians sometimes quote, and this is from the Roman Catholic tradition, Thomas Merton, he said to all of us, to everything visible, everything you can see, there is a hidden wholeness. And the stonecutter found his hidden wholeness when he found he had all the power that he needed. And we're going to go find our hidden wholeness, and to do that, we only have to do two things. Have fun and learn something. An injunction we are going to put on all of the adults in the sanctuary this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Audrey. Thank you, Stephen. Good morning. I'm Dee Evans. When I found out that I had to do the service in place of someone else, I did a very un-Buddhist thing. I panicked. Well, what they say in Buddhism is you should just sit and sit with your emotion, whatever it is, and in that particular case, it was panic. And as I watched the panic go by, it suddenly came to me, oh, in my profession, we teach meditation. I don't necessarily use the word Buddhism, but I do teach it. I can do this. So here I am, filling in for someone else, maybe second best. But that's okay, maybe later that person can come. But at this morning I'm here, so we'll deal with that the way it is, which is another Buddhist principle. I love Stephen's story this morning, and the reason I love it is because it clarifies so much about Buddhism. All of us in life attempt to seek things. We seek a person to love, a person to be loved by. We seek possessions, we seek comfort, we seek help, we seek hope, we seek joy, we seek material possessions we seek and we're constantly seeking. Constantly going, waiting for that magic whoosh. And sometimes even when we reach all our goals, and I speak from personal experience, we find out that there is a little something not quite right. Something that is still missing, despite the fact that we have achieved what we wanted to. And that leaves us with unhappiness. So for most of the time, we're running around in our lives craving something. And it is that craving that leads us to unhappiness. And the purpose of Buddhism is to help us reach happiness. The reason Buddhism and Unitarianism are such a good mesh is because Unitarians provide a place for everyone to seek whatever their path is. You can be a Unitarian and be a theist. You can be a Unitarian and be a non-theist. You can even, as in Chicago, be a Unitarian and be a Christian. You can be a Unitarian and be a pagan, or you can be a Unitarian and be a Buddhist. So it is particularly because Buddhism also does what Unitarianism does. It allows for belief and culture differences. Now that may surprise you, because unless you know something about Buddhism, you think of Buddhism. It is a philosophy. But if you really study Buddhism, you find out that there are different sects. And what Buddhism allows is that as it went from India and traveled east and then into the West, people do things differently. Some places you'll go, and it's very informal. Everybody comes in, and they sort of, you know, sit on the ground, and they don't do much. In other places, they walk in, and there's bows this way and bows that way and bows and sometimes prostrations. So if you were to go to a typical Buddhist service in Thailand and one in Vietnam and one in Japan, you would see different things. But it's all Buddhism. Now, today we're going to do what I hope is the essence of a Buddhist service. It's not going to incorporate a Zen or a Theravada or whatever, but it's the two practices that Buddhism has that seem to be universal among all Buddhists, and that's a mindfulness meditation and a compassion meditation. So let me explain that there's all kinds of meditation in Buddhism. There is, for example, a movement meditation. Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Vietnamese monk who moved to Plum Village during the Vietnam War and started this village in France, teaches a lot of movement meditation, so you learn to walk and meditate. Now, for those of you who like to do this, the best way is find a maze, walk slowly through the maze. Make sure you're not concentrating on your feet, though, because if you do, you fall. The thing is to feel the movement of your body. If you go to Florissant, there's a group of monks who teach a movement meditation that is sitting down. It's very simple. They just do 16 moves, and you just put your hands on your thighs, and you turn one sideways, and you bring it up. And you put it up here, you hit another one, do the other hand the same way, then you raise it higher and you go back with each hand. And it's 16 movements, and as you follow those movements and concentrate on them, you should be able to calm your mind. Today I'm going to concentrate on teachings from a monastery in, of all places, Missouri. It's about 2.5 hours south of St. Louis. Depending how you drive, it could be 2 to 3, depending. And I have not been there, and I'll get to that later. The name of the monastery is Dhamma Sukha. The name of the monk who runs it is Bhante Vimalasari, Vimalaramsi. He practiced in Bhutan for years and years and years. 20 years, if I remember correctly. And after 20 years, he decided that he hadn't learned very much. And he left the monastery and started going to other places. If you go to his website, you can find his history probably much better than what I'm telling it. But in one of the things he came across was a teaching about mindfulness meditation. And that's going to be our first meditation. So we're going to start with a little saying, because Buddhists ring bells a lot, with chanting from the heart from Thich Nhat Hanh from Plum Grove. So we're going to start with that. Listening to the bell, I feel my afflictions begin to dissolve. My mind is calm, my body relaxed. A smile is born on my lips. Following the bell's sound, my breathing guides me back to the safe island of mindfulness. In the garden of my heart, the flower blooms beautifully. Mindfulness meditation is a way of paying attention and concentration. If you think of the popular conception of meditation, it's sort of sitting there and going into never, never land or spacing out. That's not meditation. That's just spacing out. That's all it is. Meditation is paying attention. It is concentration. The standard practice across all sects of Buddhism is paying attention to the breath. Now, I knew that. And so for 2 years, I faithfully went to a temple in St. Louis before Lama Lobsang went into Chicago. And I would ask, what should I be doing? And he said, just sit and breathe. So I sat and I breathed. And after 2 years, I didn't know, I don't think, any more than I did when I started. When I started going to Bhante Vimalasari's website, I got an explanation of Buddhism that I'm sure was someplace like in the Dalai Lama's book on how to practice, but somehow I didn't get it. I think partly this is because when he came to America, he decided he was going to teach mindfulness meditation in a way that we would understand it, without having all the Eastern background, without having the culture. A lot of things we learn presupposes we know the culture, and we don't. So the first thing he did is he said, we're not going to sit on cushions. I didn't realize the wisdom of that. I had practiced sitting on a cushion for more than 2 years. And when I first sat in a chair, I was really uncomfortable. I wasn't used to meditating like that. But he has you sit in chairs because in the West, we don't sit on cushions. Now, if you go, and I happened to get a website, I was looking for something, and I saw Japanese chairs. They're small little things down to the ground. People in the East and Middle East are used to sitting on cushions and on small little chairs. We're not. So to practice meditation that way confines us to a cushion. And so learning mindfulness meditation the way we sit really is helpful to Westerners. The second thing he did is explain mindfulness meditation in a way that I finally, for the first time, got what I was supposed to be doing. Because what's going to happen to you is as you start concentrating on your breath, you're breathing in, breathing out, you're going to get distracted. So what we're going to do is we're going to breathe in and breathe out. We're going to understand what our breath is doing. So if we breathe in, it might be a very deep breath, or it might be a very shallow breath. Your breath may be raggedy. It may be coarse. It may be smooth. Your breath may be short. It may be long. Just note what is happening to your breath. Don't try to change it. Just accept where it is and just note it. Breathing in, breathing out. Now, that's where I stopped, and that's why I got in trouble. Because that, just noting the breath, is not the end of this meditation. The important part about this meditation is as you breathe in and breathe out, you're going to feel that breath go through your whole body and calm your body. You should be saying to yourself, I breathe in, tranquilizing the whole body. I breathe out, tranquilizing the whole body. Now, I can tell you that what's going to happen is you'll start thinking about what you forgot at Schnucks. You'll start thinking about, oh, I was supposed to wash this dress. It has to be worn. I forgot to cut the grass in the back of the shed. And as you're breathing in and breathing out, you'll start making your mental list for work or what you have to do next week. You will get distracted. That is the nature of all of our minds until we train them to do better. Now, I've been at this several years, and I still have this happen. I don't know when you get to the part that it doesn't happen. I'm sure a monk could come and tell you, but I still have it. Now, what I had thought was, this is bad. There's something wrong with me. I shouldn't be having these distractions. What's the matter with me that I can't concentrate? I teach this in my profession. I should be able to do better. All these negative thoughts, and what happens? Are you tranquilizing the body? No, you're getting tense and uptight, and then you try to come to the back to the breath, and then you get distracted again, and it gets in a very unpleasant situation, which is why a lot of people quit meditation. Instead of being tranquilizing, it's annoying. So what do? Remember in the beginning, the story of the stonecutter? What our mind goes to is all those things we want and all those things we crave and all the things or actions or people or whatever, everything but that inner nature that we're trying to look for. If I could put this in Unitarian terms, all of us are interconnected. And what we're looking for is that true nature in all of us when we meditate, and we find it in relaxation. It's that one moment when we're not distracted and we experience that inner nature. So what do when you're distracted? You note it. So I thought about the fact that I got 6 things to do tomorrow at work. Just let it go. Just let it float away. However you want to let it float away. Some people let it float away on a cloud. Some people load it on a train and let it go. Doesn't matter. Just let it go. And then what you do is you come back to your breath and you smile. You're right. You smile because you've been distracted. That's right. Because if you don't do that, if you don't give that smile, whether it's inner or outer, what you're going to do is you're going to remain tense by your distraction. So what you want to do is just smile. I was distracted. Let's breathe in. Let's breathe out. And you're back to your breath. And I'm going to breathe in, tranquilizing my body. I'm going to breathe out, tranquilizing my body. And you sit there and do that. And when the cravings come, when your thought about what happens and what you need to do, or the meal you're planning, or the memo you have to write at work, or who you have to pick up to take to a doctor's appointment, smile and come back to your breath. Just allow things to be. And you're going to relax and keep your attention focused. You're going to be mindful of your breath. So now, let's practice this for just a few moments. We're going to breathe in, breathe out. Find a comfortable posture. A suggestion is putting your feet flat on the floor. And if you say, well, I'm not a Buddhist, that's okay, because we teach mindfulness, meditation, and psychology now, because it's considered to be so beneficial. Just find a comfortable position. If you want to close your eyes, that helps. And just start breathing in, breathing out. Smile when you're distracted. And remember, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the whole body. I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the whole body. feeling the air in the room, your body against the pew, other people around you. Start opening your eyes and come back into the room. Now, this is one form of mindfulness meditation, helping you to calm yourself by being very concentrated on the breath, basic to most Buddhist type meditations, though they may teach it slightly differently. It allows you to smile and find that inner nature we all share. There's a story about mindfulness that I really love, and it may be true, I don't know, I couldn't find it. I remember the story, but I have so many Buddhist books, I couldn't find it to try to assess the whether it was a specific monk that they named or if this was just a story passed on. Either way, there's a lot of wisdom in it. In Tibet, monks study for years and years and years. I mean, they can do up to 12 years before they get, imagine getting your PhD for 12 years. Okay, that's kind of what it's like. And at the end of the study, they have the comparables to orals that one would have if you were getting your oral examination that you would be getting in the United States. They don't do writing. You have to answer everything they ask you about Buddhism. You have no idea what it's going to be, just like for my orals, nobody told me what was going to be on them. You just go in and hope you know whatever area they're going to ask you about. So that's pretty much what these monks go through. And they're examined by a panel. So this young monk goes in, panel's in front of him, and for hours they're grilling him, talking, whatever. And the other monks finally turn to his main teacher. And they say to the main teacher, you haven't asked him any questions. No questions. And the main teacher said, I only have one question. What are you supposed to be thinking about when you brush your teeth? Whoa, what a question. So I'm thinking Buddha nature, emptiness, all things are changed, suffering. Million answers are going through my mind about what you're supposed to be thinking about when you brush your teeth. The monk paused, thought a moment, and said, when you're brushing your teeth, you should be thinking about brushing your teeth. Wow, how powerful. So that's mindfulness meditation. As I told you, in my profession, we teach it without mentioning Buddhism. The interesting thing, I ran across a study about 2 weeks ago, and they were talking about multitasking. Now, women are always good at multitasking, and I thought, oh, you know, we're more efficient than men because we can multitask better than men. Guess what? Make more mistakes when you multitask. It takes you longer to get things accomplished. And it's better if you stay with one task and stick with it. The Buddhists taught that how many thousands of years ago? Okay. So here we are with mindfulness meditation. Now, in Buddhism, there's other kinds of meditation, movement meditation, where you're mindful of the movement you're making. There's meditation where you can meditate on a object like a mandala, which is considered a sacred picture. I have a whole bunch of them at home. And the meaning of that picture, it's much the same way that some Christians or Catholics will meditate on an image of Christ or the Virgin Mary or whatever. It's comparable. You can chant and meditate while you're chanting, being aware of what that chanting meant. I thought about doing that here. My favorite chant is Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And I love that chant because it can put you into kind of a rhythmic ideation, but it's sort of like Gregorian chant. Gregorian chant is out of the Catholic and the Anglican traditions. And if you listen to that chant long enough, and they're beautiful chants, you will fall into a meditative state if you really concentrate on the music. But if you know what those Latin words mean, you'd sometimes think, but I don't want to chant that, I don't believe that. Well, it's sort of like the Buddhist chants, just because I feel great saying, you know, I recognize the Buddha nature in everybody, you may not. So I chose to not use chants here, but that's another way to meditate. Another way is to take a concept and meditate on it. Catholics have been doing this also for centuries on the idea of, let's say, the divine nature of Christ, which is something they believe. Buddhists will take a concept like emptiness and meditate on it. That's called insight meditation. There's another form of meditation that's common to all forms of Buddhism called compassion meditation. And so we're going to do that now. It's a guided meditation. You can do this unguided, but I'm going to give you a guided meditation. And just again, get in a comfortable position, close your eyes. I would like you to consider a light source. If you need to, you can use this light from our chalice. Some kind of light source, or, you know, if you believe in a divinity, you can picture the light coming from that divinity or Buddha, or just the, all as some biologist, the underlying life that we all share, that principle of life of all living things. And just feature coming over you a very warm, warm light. And the light is going to cover you from head to toe. And you're going to start very feeling warm, but not uncomfortable, being covered with the light from head to toe. And you're going to start feeling that light and that warmth into your body, into your chest. And from your chest, that warm, radiating feeling goes all the way through you. Very warm, very comforting. And now, as you're feeling that warmth, that comfort radiating through you, your whole body, internally, externally, and that warm, radiating feeling into your mind, relaxing you, relaxing your body. Make a wish for your own happiness. Say, may I be happy. May I be cheerful. Feel that wish for your happiness and make sure it has meaning for you. Not the kind of happiness that acquires things or achieves things, but the happiness that just brings you contentment and joy. You might even feel a smile go through your mind, your eyes, your lips, your heart, as you say, may I be happy, may I be cheerful, may I be happy, may I be cheerful. And as you feel the warm glow seeping through your entire being and your feeling of happiness radiating throughout you and extending that compassionate happiness to yourself, pick three people, any three people you love. Bring those three people in to that warm, radiating happiness see the same light source covering them, filling them with warmth all over, from the top of their head to their toes, till it enters into their heart and radiates through their whole being, and make for them the same wish that they're glowing in the feeling of happiness. May they be happy. May they be cheerful. And together, you and your loved ones are feeling the warmth, the glow of your shared nature, of the light of your happiness. Smile in your mind, in your eyes, on your lips, in your heart. Smile and feel that glow. Now, picture three people, bring them in, hear them or see them, that really irritate you. People that you have to deal with and you wish you didn't have to. Bring in those three people, those three irritating people. It could be a friend, a coworker, someone at the church. It could be your child who's just irritating you at this moment. Bring them in, those people that right now you wish you wouldn't have to deal with, because they're so irritating. They may even be an enemy. Bring them in. And watch that warm glow, that warm light, spread all over them from the same light source that enveloped you and your friends and your loved ones. And watch it spread over these three people, the people that really irritate you. And send them a wish for their happiness. Feel it deeply. May you be happy. May you be cheerful. May you be happy. May you be cheerful. And as you send it to them, your wish for their happiness, smile in your mind, in your eyes, in your lips, and in your heart. And feel the warmth over you, over your loved ones, and over them. Then slowly open your eyes, feel the pew, and come back into the room. I have shared with you two different types of meditation that Buddhists do that is common to all of their practices. I have not shared with you all the cultural differences between them because they're not really important. If you notice on your program, it says Dharma Talk or Dhamma Talk. A Dhamma Talk is a teaching talk. And I decided after the program was written that I wasn't going to do a Dharma or Dhamma Talk. Both words mean the same, they're just said differently, again on tradition. Because I'm a babe as a Buddhist, I don't know that much, but I know someone who does. So I'm going to give you his website. The website, this is the monastery in Missouri, is Dhamma, D-H-A-M-M-A, D-H-A-M-M-A, Second word, sukha, S-U-K-H-A. And what that means is teachings of happiness. And I've put that in just the way it is. I don't do .com or .org or .anything. I just put that in. And it comes up. I use Google, so it comes up. And that's Bhante Vimalasari's teachings. I've never met the man. I have not yet been to the monastery because it's a long drive, and I have a husband I don't want to leave alone at night because of his health. But I have probably, in all my years of teaching, learned more from him than I have any other teacher I've had. I learned it all off of YouTube and the web. Interesting. He said he was going to bring Buddhism to America, and he has. He made meditation seated instead of on cushions. And he decided teachings. You didn't have to follow him off to a monastery. He put them on YouTube. And the other thing he did that I find so interesting is he did a lot of little 10-minute teachings. We have very short attention spans because we're a TV generation, though most of us here might not be that much of a TV generation, but we do. Generally, people do. Now, he does have some hour teachings, but most of them are just 10, 15 minutes, some less than that. I invite you to go to his website and to listen to his teachings, because whether you're a Buddhist or ever tend to be a Buddhist or have no interest, he's just a wise person. I don't think you can do 30-something years of meditation and not learn something about human nature. So that's the Dhamma Talk. Go to the website. I wanted our day to end rather quietly, so I asked Joy if she would play a prelude, and we will just sit here and listen to her music, and then we'll go and have potluck. Thank you. Thank you.